Speak of the Devil. ESPN, they're up here. The Jump is up here as well. And here's the host of The Jump on ESPN, back on Overdrive, Rachel Nichols. How you doing, Rachel?
I like being the devil.
Yes. Yeah, you've caused quite a stir in Toronto.
It's fun to have a little mischief. And by the way, I'd just like to say that also in that interview with Kyle, he said lovely things about how the team is playing. He talked about playing with Kawhi. None of that stuff ever gets any headlines, but I understand. I see how it goes. I know how it goes.
Yeah. Rachel, before we get into Kyle and Masai and that relationship, earlier in the season, Jimmy Butler just teed off in Minnesota, and I found it a little bit weird that all of a sudden after that, I think he kind of went off on teammates, management types, coaches, and all of a sudden Rachel Nichols is in Minnesota. Can you kind of take us back to that? Was
sure.
Was that something that he was, like, that was planned? You were going to meet with him after practice and all those things happened?
So, yeah, because this is so funny that this, like, struck a lot of people as weird, because it cracked me up that people were like, oh, you were just wandering around with a camera crew in Minnesota. I was like, how do you think any of these interviews happen? Do you think yesterday I was just wandering around Toronto and I happened to stumble into Raptors practice? Every single interview you see, not just me, but anyone else on TV, is planned. None of them are a surprise, not one, ever. So yes, Jimmy Butler is someone who is obviously very much in the news since the summer, and his trade demands became public. He had not spoken at all publicly. Everybody wanted to talk to him. I have a long relationship with Jimmy Butler from his rookie year in Chicago. I was a sideline reporter back then, so I was doing a lot sort of around those kinds of teams, and you would just sit around at practices and talk to some of the younger players. So we've had sort of a working relationship for quite some time, and I was talking to him off the record throughout September and sort of saying, hey, you know what? You should come into the Jump and talk about what you're doing, right? You should talk about what, you know, all this stuff, because like any other reporter, and by the way, I wasn't the only one, a lot of people wanted to talk to him and get his first public comments. So he was actually going to come in and be on set with us, I think the Thursday before. And we all had it all planned and he was going to come. And again, yes, that was planned because that's how TV interviews work. And he was going to come in, and literally that morning, sort of the talks with Miami heated up. And he and his agent were like, you know what, we don't want him to come on, and he could finally be getting out. We don't want him to come on and say something, and that scares off the heat and whatever. And I understand that, right? So we just kind of put it, again, on the back burner. And then, as if you remember, over that weekend, I think it was Saturday night or Sunday, there was sort of this big thing between Pat Riley and Tom Thibodeau, and the talks just completely, you know, got stuck. And what had looked like he was going to get traded to Miami didn't happen. And even through that weekend, we were talking, and I was like, all right, I'll meet you in Miami. Like, when the trade happens, we'll do it there, right? He was going to come on Thursday. That didn't work. We'll do it in Miami. And then the trade didn't happen. So then it became, okay, well, now I'm going to meet you in Minnesota because you're obviously stuck there for a while. And he was just sort of stewing for a day or two after that Miami trade fell through. And then I think it was a Tuesday we did the interview. On a Monday late in the day, like maybe 4 or 5 o'clock, he called me. And you know, I said, we've had a working relationship for a long time, so we had to talk, text, you know, whatever. And he said, okay, I'm ready to, like, plunge back into the public tomorrow. I'm going to go to practice. I'm going to talk to the media. But instead of doing a scrum, right, instead of having 18 questions shouted at him from 18 different directions and not really in sort of a cohesive, you know, tell me the story kind of form, he wanted to sit down and do a sit-down interview. And by the way, that is what we, and again, not just me, but anyone you see sitting down, is trying to sell players on, right? Hey, sit down. Talk in a one-on-one. Instead of, like, being shouted questions at in a big group, come do sort of a controlled environment where we just go through point by point and you can tell your story. That's something we want to do with every athlete when we sit them down. And so that was sort of the conversation setting up the interview. I was not wandering around Minnesota. I got on a plane to Minnesota on purpose to talk to Jimmy Butler because he was going to, quote, reemerge kind of into doing sort of his public thing. And that was going to practice and then talking to media. And in fact, that first media was me. And then he talked to the general scrum media, or whatever you want to call it, the next time the Wolves were available for practice. So it was just so funny to me that there was this weird sort of outcry of, like, oh, I guess you just happened to be there. Ha, ha, ha. I guess it was a setup. They're all set up, people. I don't want to, like, burst anyone's bubble here.
Yeah, that's very disappointing.
Every sit-down interview, I know, every sit-down interview you have ever seen in sports, news, entertainment, no one is wandering around and running into Tom Cruise on a street corner. If you see a Tom Cruise interview, that has also been set up. I hope I'm not, like, ruining you know, Christmas or anything for anyone, but that is how that works.
Yeah, maybe a little bit. With Rachel Nichols of The Jump on ESPN, you can watch it on TSN2 all week at 3 p.m. They're up here in Toronto. It's Raptors-Sixers tonight. You can hear it right here on TSN Radio. Watch it on ESPN in the States. So speaking of those premeditated, you know, sit-downs and those type of arrangements, again, we mentioned the Lowry clip. We played it. And, you know, I thought you handled that really well. You're like, that's going to leave it open to interpretation. And that's what the city's been doing. The NBA's been interpreting it. And you sat down with Masai Ujiri today and you asked him about it. And he said something along the lines of, Kyle is always mad at me every single year, but I love him. He plays basketball the right way. I know I haven't done anything wrong to him. What do you make of this back and forth between the president of the team and the face of the team and Kyle Lowry?
I got passed into you guys kind of halfway through your conversation, so I heard the end of one of you saying, you know, you hadn't seen them being close prior to that. And I think that was kind of a version of what Masai, I thought it was astute hearing you say that, and that's, you know, kind of what Masai seemed to be saying as well. Like, look, you know, this is not where we've been, you know, having sleepovers and braiding each other's hair. So the fact that he's upset with me, like, okay, what I said on the show today, and I think the numbers bear this out. Kyle Lowry is leading the league in assists. The Raptors are 20-5. Like, he is not sulking. He is not pouting. You talk about Jimmy Butler. When Jimmy Butler wanted off that team, like he missed a few games, right? He didn't quite play 100% in the way that he had prior to that. We have seen certainly Kawhi Leonard, who, when he was at odds with the franchise, and obviously there were injury issues there, but part of that was being at odds with the franchise over how they handled his injury, only played 9 games last year. Kyle Lowry, no matter how he feels about Masai Ujiri, has been a professional. He has walked into that practice facility. He was, despite being upset about DeMar leaving, he has been welcoming Kawhi Leonard with open arms. He didn't blame Kawhi for that trade. The two of them have a good relationship already. You can see it on the court, and he has been playing his heart out. So I think that speaks well of Kyle. And I think Masai, because he knows he can depend on Kyle to be a pro, I said to him, I said, you have to fix this sort of over the course of the season. And he said, well, I'll try. But, you know, he kind of pointed to Kyle being a pro too and said, you know, a version of what Kyle said is we're coming to work every day and we're doing our jobs. And maybe that's what you get from the two of them in this team. And as long as the fans certainly aren't being cheated by either one of those guys.
No, they're not. I mean, they're 20-5 and they're the top team in the East, first overall in the NBA. And, you know, Lowry, he's always been a bit hit or miss with the media. You know, he can be coy. He can be a bit moody, a bit petulant. But sometimes he gives you gold. You know, if he's in the right mood, he's absolutely gold in terms of interviews. Masai, you know, always kind of brings the same disposition. And he's always trying to sell the team and trying to make sure that people feel like, okay, there's positive vibes up here in Toronto. But the DeRozan trade, you know, that was arguably the biggest deal in franchise history, bigger than Vince because of the context and because of the uncertainty of it all. And you look at what's going on in San Antonio, I mean, I kind of feel for DeMar because up here in Toronto, he was always craving that spotlight. He always felt like he was undervalued league-wide with the ESPN rankings and SI rankings. Now he heads to the Spurs. For the first time in, like, this century, they're falling off a cliff. How much love is DeMar getting in the States and on ESPN, considering what's going on with the Spurs?
Yeah, I mean, I think his individual accomplishments and how well he's been playing have certainly been noted. And we have an hour-long basketball show a day, so we talk about everyone. I mean, you know, there's some outlets that really only talk about the top teams, but we go into it on every team. So we've certainly talked a bit about the Spurs and talked about the good things DeMar has been doing. But yeah, man, I mean, it's a huge season of change for the Spurs, right? Some of the tentpole figures of that organization are gone. You know, it's not just Kawhi who's gone, but Tony Parker is gone. Manu Ginobili retired. I mean, there's been huge change in that organization, and they don't have the talent that they had for a very long time. And, you know, it's sort of showing. They're in the most competitive Western Conference ever. And I thought that Greg Popovich had a really interesting comment the other day. He talked about not liking the three-point shot. And it was sort of seeing a little bit of like old man shakes fist at sky where he was like, I've never liked it. 20 years, I've never liked it. I don't like its growing importance in the game. It takes a lot of, you know, the talent or the skill out of the game. I'm not quoting him directly, but that's basically what he said. And there's people like, what are you talking about? The game's so fun to watch right now. It's great. Those three pointers are fun. But the sort of the layer of what he was saying is that some of the nuance of coaching and talent that you had, if you sort of had a roster and you were a great, smart coach who could find tucked under corners, right? The little advantages, the little bit of scouting you could do, the little bit of stuff you could do from really knowing how to analyze game tape. If you could really get the best out of all your players, you were able to win basketball games, and that's what we've talked about for a long time, right? The Spurs way, right? Plug and play, put another guy in, that kind of thing, and that's why Greg Popovich is rightly considered one of the best coaches who has ever coached in the game. Well, the three-point shot, in some way, is the bludgeoning hammer that combats all that, because there's no doubt that you can do all of those little sort of nuanced things and be a great coach and find the talent and do whatever. And then someone comes in and shoots 23 pointers in your building, and that's 60 points, and that's it. I mean, you're in trouble. So I think that there's an element of all those different things we talk about with the Spurs and the talent that's there and the talent that's missing and DeMar and all this other stuff. That little comment from Popovich was so telling to me, because it's a great point about what has made the Spurs great for so long. And that is tougher in an environment with a three-point shot and the sort of greater offensive movement emphasis that we've had is part of the league. And that doesn't mean it's unfair that the Spurs are getting screwed over. It just means that basketball changes, and it's sort of changed in a way that isn't advantageous to this Spurs team right now.
Enjoy your time in Toronto. It was great catching up with you, Rachel. We appreciate it.